What is up, everyone? Welcome back to our little podcast here at Fandango. My name is Eric Davis. My co-host joining me is Sean O'Connell, the Sean O'Connell. And last week, Sean, we took off because, you know, people take vacations. I took a little
vacation. God forbid.
I know. Took a little vacation down to your neck of the woods, North Carolina. It was fun. It was hip. It was dandy. But you know what? Now we're back, and we're back.
We have work to do.
Yeah, we do. It's the dog days of summer, is what they call them, which is now early August through, you know, the month of August. And it's an interesting month at the movies, I think. There's a lot coming out this weekend in terms of stuff you can go see. And the rest of the month, I think, definitely gives you some interesting choices, especially the weekend of August 23rd. I'm a really big fan of that weekend. More so for the limited releases, but there's a lot of stuff coming out at the end of the month I think that you should keep an eye out for, and we'll talk about that as we get later in the month. But things to discuss today, Sean.
Yes.
D23 is this weekend, and I know a lot of people are probably online, and they're hearing, oh, D23, and they have no idea what D23 is, except for the fact that it has something to do with Disney, and maybe, just maybe, Mr. Sean O'Connell, we are going to get some official Star Wars Episode 7 news this weekend, and that is why you should start paying attention to D23.
Right. Well, let's explain what it is. It's a convention being held in Anaheim, Southern California, that is, I think, wants to eventually come close to stealing a little thunder away from Comic-Con. I don't know if it really could ever get to that level, because Comic-Con branches out into so many different areas, and D23 is really Disney related. But the point is, you know, over the past couple of months and years, Disney has accumulated so many major properties that we have to start paying attention to D23, just because of the sheer amount of news that could come out of it for projects that are involved with Marvel and Pixar and Disney's normal animation branch. And then, of course, as you say, Disney now owns Star Wars through their partnership with Lucasfilm. And so when they didn't have a presence at Comic-Con in San Diego, we all assumed it was because they're saving everything for Anaheim this weekend. And so, yeah, I think if you're a Star Wars fanatic, you're going to want to be perched in front of the laptop to find out what J.J. Abrams and Kathleen Kennedy have planned for Episode 7, which is coming in 2015.
Yeah, exactly. And we don't know for sure that Star Wars announcements are going to come from the movies, but we do know, I know Saturday afternoon is sort of their presentation block. You know, this is kind of like a convention, but just for Disney. They show off a lot of their upcoming toys and their products, and they're going to have Star Wars toys and Star Wars stuff there, but just they haven't said yet we're going to make any big Star Wars announcements. So what we could look forward to is maybe an official release date for Star Wars Episode 7. If they really want to blow people's minds, they'll bring out Harrison Ford, Carrie Fisher, and Mark Hamill on stage and say, yes, officially, these three will be in Episode 7, and it's hitting theaters on this date. I don't think they'll go any farther than that.
Right.
I can't see them giving us saying this is who's going to be in the movie. I don't see them doing that yet. But I think that at the very least, we'll get a release date. At the very most, we'll get those three on stage, officially confirming that they're in the movie. Other than that, other than Star Wars, you know, there's a couple of release dates out there for Marvel movies that we don't know what movies they are yet. I think same things with Pixar, possibly. There's a couple of release dates out there. We don't know what Pixar movies are yet. So in terms of news, if you're right around your computer this weekend and you're hearing about D23 and you're looking for movie news, look for release dates, movies. I could see Marvel saying, yeah, we're going to have a Doctor Strange movie and this is when it's going to hit theaters. I could see that happening, and we could
see. Now they've already released that Age of Ultron news for the Avengers 2, mm-hmm. So that's hit. But you're right; it's sort of Phase 3 stuff, right? That we might be hearing from Marvel.
Possibly. I mean, Kevin Feige, who runs Marvel Studios, he says, you know, we're not going to hear about Phase 3 stuff until, you know, Phase 2 is over. But you know, Thor is hitting the midway point of Phase 2.
Right. Right.
We may hear a little bit. I know they have two release dates that they've said Marvel movies are coming out on these dates. When are they going to announce those? You would think D23 would be a perfect place to announce what those movies are, rather than just, you know, putting them out on a random day at a random time. So we could see that. And Disney, you know, let Marvel do a little thing at Comic-Con, but they're going to want a little bit Marvel for themselves at their own little the little camp out. So
yeah, but we both agree that the headline grabber is going to be Star Wars, because right now it's still a mystery. And you're right. It's funny that like there aren't a lot of things that they can reveal yet at this point, unless they get into casting. But, you know, I don't see us getting a synopsis and a release date. It's funny, like we know 2015, but we don't really know when. We're kind of speculating it might be May. I mean, weren't we once talking about like Memorial Day? Yeah. Would fit perfectly into this?
That's what I think. That's when I think it's going to hit. I think it's going to be Memorial Day weekend, right. May 2015, right between a Batman versus Superman movie and the Avengers 2. And let me tell you something, that will be a trio to go down in history. I remember back in 2012, we were talking about the Avengers, Dark Knight Rises, Amazing Spider-Man trio.
Right.
As being like the be-all, end-all trio of summer movies. I think that trio would top it.
Do you think D23 is going to be something that people travel to in time? Like, will this be – because like Disney has their fingers in so many major properties. Is this going to become a must-attend event every year?
I think if they make it more accessible. I think right now it's a little bit insidery for people that are Disney nerds who particularly live in the Anaheim area, and for press. A lot of press go down there too, because they wait for some big announcements to come out. But if they make it more accessible, if it becomes more of like a Star Wars celebration, you know, the Star Wars celebration that happens in Florida, there was just one in Germany. Those are very accessible for fans of Star Wars. As Disney begins to kind of grow their Marvel brand, grow their Star Wars brand, continues to grow Pixar, and if they can make something, if they can make D23 a little bit more accessible and a little bit more kind of fan friendly, I could see it. I could see it becoming something that people travel to. It's just a little, because it comes so close to Comic-Con, I think for that quote unquote fan, if you're deciding between the two of them, you want to go to Comic-Con.
Kevin Feige is telling Wired magazine as we speak. This is breaking news on our podcast right now. He's telling Wired magazine that they've got the Marvel slate planned out through the year 2021.
Wow.
And I mean, obviously, that's going to include things like Ant-Man. People are speculating Doctor Strange, Black Panther, and Avengers 3. So, I mean, there are properties that we could fill in with question marks behind them. But I mean, you're talking about Marvel owning, you know, your pocketbook for the next a decade at least. So,
and it's a big move. And how will DC counter it? You know, we have the Batman versus Superman movie. We've heard trickles about a Flash movie. We've heard about a Justice League movie. Where are they going to go? It's just interesting when Spider-Man threw down their gauntlet and said we're in until like what is it 2017 2018?
Yes.
That was like a little bit heavy for us to hear. Now Marvel's thrown down a bigger gauntlet, said we're in it till 2021. let's see Warner Brothers come out tomorrow and say, screw you, we got plans till 2030.
Boy, Harry Potter changed everything. Harry Potter said, we're going to do 7 films, you know, one franchise, and fans are going to stick around for it.
Yeah.
And Star Wars wants to do what? They said a standalone and a build off the franchise, you know, every other year. Boy, we are living in a franchise world at this point.
We are living in a franchise world, and if you're a fan of these franchises, and there are a lot of fans, and I'm a fan of these franchises, it's fun to kind of anticipate. It's fun to look forward to. You just hope that the product is as good as – or as fun as the anticipation of it. Sean, let's briefly touch on another topic. Speaking of Marvel, speaking of superheroes, Thor 2 trailer came out this week, very close to the Comic-Con trailer that they showed at Comic-Con, except for the ending, which I don't really want to go into because they left the ending off, and there's a reason why they left that ending off. Maybe it was too spoilerish.
I think it's too spoilerish. I was very surprised that they showed it, you know, to the Comic-Con crowd. And there are a couple of beats that were different from the Comic-Con footage, which I think is kind of fun. You know, this is a little more mainstream, a little safer. I'm a little disappointed that I saw the Comic-Con stuff because I didn't want to know that was coming, and it's hard to dance around it without giving it away. Just talking about the trailer in general, though, I still think it looks great. I think the scope of this looks fantastic. I think that bringing in Alan Taylor, who has directed a few Game of Thrones episodes, is going to bring up the perfect touch to this Asgard world, because we already know we're going to visit more areas of the Nine Realms. We're going to spend more time in Asgard. Loki is in this Asgardian prison, but for some reason he and Thor are going to have to work together against the villain, the main villain in it, which is Malekith, played by Christopher Eccleston. I'm continually impressed by what they're doing in this film, and I have a ton of confidence in what Marvel wants to do for Phase 2, because you and I talked briefly about the Captain America footage also, which looked great, but looked great for totally different reasons. I think it's excellent that these films are acting as standalone films and building their own worlds. But then Hemsworth has said in interviews, you know, that way when everybody comes together again for another Avengers film, it feels special. There's still something unique about it. But I'm totally psyched for Thor: The Dark World, because I liked what Branagh did in the first film. And I like where they seem to be taking the story to in this next chapter.
I completely agree. You know, and a lot of times we kind of criticize films for going too big.
Yeah.
But when it comes to Thor, I felt the first Thor movie felt a little bit small for this character. And so, like, I'm really happy to see that they're expanding it and they're going to these other realms, and there's a lot of different characters, and we're going to play in a field. You know, that I love how the trailer ends, and we saw an extended version of that scene at Comic-Con, but you know, now we're playing around with this character. We're in a field and there's this big rock monster, and you know, that's kind of Thor. That's what's fun about this character. And so I like it. I'm still not sold on Natalie Portman as the love interest, and I don't know if Natalie Portman's going to be around for any future Thor movies. I don't know that for fact, but I just get an inkling that we're going to see a definitive finale for her character in this film. I don't know if what that means, but I don't know. I just don't see her sticking around.
Yeah, I'd be surprised if she locked herself up, you know, for multiple superhero films. It doesn't really seem like her cup of tea. And they do want Jane to be a major part of this film. She's obviously being brought back to Asgard. But yeah, I could totally see them going in a different direction.
Yeah, but I'm curious to see it. I think it looks great, and it will continue the Marvel streak.
I can't wait to see if it does Iron Man 3 type money, or if Iron Man 3 just benefited from being A, the first movie after Avengers, and B, the first summer blockbuster, because, you know, Thor's coming out in November. Thanksgiving is a good weekend, or it's actually the first weekend in November. But are these Marvel movies just simply going to be, we put out a Marvel movie and it earns $1 billion?
Exactly.
I don't think it will, but God, if it does, Kevin Feige should just, you know, there should be a bronze statue of him in front of Walt Disney World for just coming up with this cinematic universe that people flock to.
Yeah, well, I guess I will get a really good feeling of that with their next two, because they're both coming out on release dates that Marvel has not experimented yet. They haven't experimented in November. They haven't experimented in April when Captain America 2 comes out.
Right.
So it's going to be very interesting to see how they do in these other time slots. And if they don't do as well, does Marvel kind of reconfigure what they did? You know, Thor is coming out in that Skyfall spot, though, I think, right around when Skyfall came out last year. So they
and that did really well.
That did bonkers numbers. Of course, they're completely different movies, but you know, November is a time when big franchises like to hang out. Twilight hung out in November too. So
yeah.
So we'll see what happens this November 8th when Thor: The Dark World hits theaters. Speaking of things that are hitting theaters, a lot hitting theaters this weekend. I was on vacation, so naturally I haven't seen anything. We both haven't seen Elysium, so we can't talk extensively about that film, but we'll mention it at the end and just kind of tell you what to look forward to if you're interested in seeing it. Let me ask you one question about the other four movies coming out this weekend. We have Planes, we have Percy Jackson and Sea of Monsters, I think that's called.
Yeah, that's correct.
We have We're the Millers, which I think a lot of people will be interested in hearing a little bit more about. What kind of comedy is this? We see Jennifer Aniston. We see Jason Sudeikis. Is it like a National Lampoon's Vacation? What kind of vibe? That's kind of vibe I'm getting from it. And then we have, of course, Elysium. Let's start out with We're the Millers. I feel like We're the Millers continues that summer trend of R-rated foul-mouthed movies that we're getting, comedies for that matter. I think when Ted made bonkers money, then in The Hangover, it just kind of solidified the fact that most of the comedies that come out in the summertime are going to be R-rated, and they're going to be naughty and foul-mouthed and deal with it.
Yes, and that's what this is. It's filthy. It's unapologetically dirty. You know, they don't try and pull back the language. They embrace their R rating. They don't try and, you know, water it down to go for the maybe safe PG-13 movie. So if you're looking for that kind of comedy, it certainly delivers on that level. I was just disappointed in it because it starts off, it has a really mean streak, you know, for about 40, 45 minutes. It sets up these four characters who have to pretend to be a family unit because Jason Sudeikis' character wants to smuggle marijuana from Mexico into the States. And he comes up with this plan that, you know, safe, generic, suburban-looking families crossing the border get no attention from the Border Patrol cops. And so he recruits a stripper, played by Jennifer Aniston, and a latchkey kid, and then a street rat, you know, essentially to pretend to be his wife, his son, and his daughter. And, you know, it spends 45 minutes telling us how despicable these people are, and then it turns and wants you to sort of embrace them as, you know, real people and characters we're supposed to care about. And it goes for this sentimental ending that tries to redeem everybody, which is disappointing because it could have, if it wanted to, stayed really mean and stayed really funny, I thought, but it changes gears and then it sort of loses its way. So, you know, there's some really good supporting parts by people like Luis Guzman and Nick Offerman, and they're tremendous, you know, in their parts. I just think it wanted to be it wanted to give everybody a happy ending, and it shouldn't have. This isn't the kind of movie that earns a happy ending. It should have stayed mean, and it should have stayed aggressive because it was much better when it was doing that.
Yeah, it's always interesting when you see films like that, like Bad Teacher, right. Bad Santa, you know, films where they just have these really despicable characters, but they always find a way to make you root for them. But it's dangerous. It's a dangerous, delicate balance, especially when you have four despicable characters that you need to try to redeem by the end of the film. And I could see that kind of ending up with a weird sort of tonal balance.
I left Where the Millers convinced that Sudeikis, though, has a big screen career waiting for him. He is really funny. And, you know, he just needs – it's funny you mentioned Vacation because people always tried to figure out what to do with Chevy Chase. If you plug Sudeikis into the right script, he's going to be excellent. He's really funny.
Yeah, I see him as kind of a straighter – better looking Ed Helms. The two of them I feel like are similar.
And Helms is in this movie.
And Helms is in this film too. Yeah. All right, let's move on. We don't have a lot of time. Planes, my one question, is it as good as Cars?
No, it's not. And the funny thing is, it's the same Cars story. It takes the story from Cars and Cars 2, but puts it into Planes. But it's not a Pixar film. It's just a Disney film. And it really just targets the youngest audience members. It doesn't do anything for parents. It just, you know, if you liked Cars and Cars 2, this is the same story, but again, but with different characters you don't care quite as much about.
A lot of 4-year-olds, I'm sure, and 5-year-olds will still dig it.
They'll love it. It's bright, it's colorful, it moves fast, but it doesn't aspire to be anything other than Cars with Wings.
No, especially sounds kind of like the Smurfs, you know, and so but yeah. You kind of get a little string of those, and sometimes those aren't so bad. My kid is addicted to the Smurfs, and she's 4, so.
Well, there's a lot of family things in theaters right now. This is the time where more families have been coming to me and saying, oh, what about this movie? What about that movie? Because early on, it was Man of Steel, and it was, you know, X-Men or Wolverine and things that they couldn't really bring young kids to, and right now there's a glut of things out there for young kids.
Speaking of a little bit older kids, young adult, yes. Adaptations are hot right now. Percy Jackson and the Sea of Monsters is one of those. Where does this fall along the lines in terms of adaptations? Is it a forgettable adaptation, kind of like The Host? Or is it something that could turn into a big franchise like maybe Hunger Games?
I think it deserves to be a bigger franchise than it probably will end up being. The first movie did okay at the box office. It didn't make a ton in the States, but it did well overseas. It strikes me as like the Wimpy Kid movies where, you know, there's an audience for them. There are people who read these books and they enjoy them, and the directors do a good enough job with the adaptation that it satisfies the fans and they make a decent amount of money. The director of this movie, oddly enough, directed Wimpy Kid. And so he's taking over the franchise from Chris Columbus, who directed the first Percy Jackson movie. It's really imaginative, and I'm sure that a lot of that's pulled from the pages of the books. But the special effects are really good in it. I was surprised that they just kept escalating to really strange things like, you know, the characters will hitchhike on the back of a dragon, you know, through the ocean, and there's a mechanical bull, and there are centaurs and really odd characters. there's good supporting characters like from Stanley Tucci and Nathan Fillion is in it. So there's people who know what they're doing. Logan Lerman still doesn't strike me as a compelling leading man. I liked him in Perks of Being a Wallflower, but he's kind of going through the motions in this franchise. But the young adult kids who love the books, this movie is really imaginative and very clever and visually creative. And I think it deserves to do better than it probably will. So I enjoyed it. And I would totally send parents who have adventurous kids or are looking for some visual spectacle on the big screen, you should check it out and maybe even do the 3D, because I think that they did a great job with the 3D. It's worth it from seeing it from that perspective.
We both have not seen Elysium with Matt Damon. A little background, if you saw District 9, it's from the same director. It has what feels like some of the same themes, except it's on a much bigger scale. Some of the criticisms that are being lobbed at it is that it tries to send a social message, but it kind of gets lost in the big spectacle of the film. We haven't seen it yet, but it looks fun. It looks like, I feel like Matt Damon is a guy where he's in an action movie and he doesn't let you down. He always delivers a really good performance. I liked a lot of the behind-the-scenes stories in this. And hey, Jodie Foster. It's always good to see her on the big screen. She plays, I think, a villain in this film, right. And it looks good, and I want to see it, and I think I'd recommend it to fans of sci-fi, fans of original sci-fi, too.
Also might be one of our last big blockbusters. Like, the season's starting to come to a close. You know, we have a couple of sequels coming up in Kick-Ass 2, but things are starting to transition next week. Next week, we get The Butler. We get Paranoia. We get films that are starting to lead us into more character-driven, actor-driven, potential awards categories. And I think this might be the last big, hey, you got to see it on the big screen because the effects are really good type film.
Last chance to watch things explode, ladies and gentlemen. So go see Elysium. Sean O'Connell, it's always a pleasure talking to you, and we'll reconvene next week, and we'll kind of maybe look a little bit more at August. And like Sean said, we're starting to kind of shift in the seasons of movies, and we're going to get into a lot of really, really meaty movies pretty soon. And there are some cool genre movies coming out at the end of this month, too, that we want to talk about. So we will talk about them. Join us next week on the podcast, on Fandango. Go over to Fandango. If you're interested in seeing any of these movies this weekend, go buy tickets and then tell them that we sent you there so they're nice to us next week. Sean.
Yes.
Have a good weekend at the movies.